Sean Pesch is the founder and chief investment officer at Ranmore Funds. He was at the BizNews conference last Thursday, gave us a wonderful presentation, which will be published in the course of next week. We'd love to get his impressions and also some insights on the interest rate cuts and some South African companies that have just released financial results. Well, there we go, Sean. Quite a mouthful. Let's start with getting home, back to the UK, having a look at your homeland. It is your homeland. As I always say, there's no such thing as an ex-South African. Unfortunately, wherever you are, you'll be given away by your accent. What did you take from the conference last week?
Yeah, Alec, it was tough to come back. I've got to be honest. 1 week in beautiful South Africa is definitely not enough. And only a day or so in Hermanus. Thank you for the opportunity to be there. And September's a beautiful time. Proteas are out and bloom. It's stunning. So different beauty at different times. Now, in terms of the BizNews Investment Conference, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I must tell you a story, which I didn't get to. The night before, I was staying at our place in Tiwaters Cliff. And the night before, I had drinks with friends. And we were talking about Eskom, and one of the ladies, Gail, good friend of ours, she said, "Oh, I must tell you, I worked with Mteto Nyati. The guy's brilliant." I said, "What makes him so special?" He's a great leader, and he's so collaborative, and he will bring people on side. Wow, it's amazing. I hadn't even looked at the agenda. I was so busy and so rushed to get there. I couldn't believe it. I look at the agenda the next morning, and there he is, speaker number two. So I had to go up to him and say, mention Gail's name. So it was really enlightening for me to see him speak and to hear them and to hear about the wonderful stuff that he's done. And I thought for me, he was the winner. Okay. He was up against some tough competition, but, I thought Mteto Nyati was very, I thought it was a great speech. And I just think, he has done remarkably well. And I think the other thing is, so often when everybody is on one side of the seesaw, everyone's negative, oh, this load shedding is going to go on forever, etc. Boom. All of a sudden, like there's no load shedding. So it just shows you one's got to be careful about getting too fixated, too negative, too positive, etc. So congratulations to him and his team. And the other thing which is interesting is that you'll recall at one part in his speech, he talked about AI, joining the dots with individuals saying, well, hang on, this person does this job, but they're driving a Maserati and live in a 5 million, own a 5 million rand house in wherever, and those dots don't line up. Those points don't line up, and they use AI. Now, if a big corporation like Eskom is finding benefits from AI, it just shows you, and it's a point I've made before, is don't just think that the only beneficiaries of AI are NVIDIA. It's the other companies too. So for me, that was just fabulous, and I was really delighted to see. And, that just makes such a difference to the small companies out there that can keep the lights on, the restaurants, the shops that are able to, carry on charging people with their handheld terminals, etc. So it makes a big difference, and it's great and well done. So, yeah, that was my key takeaway.
You mentioned the small companies. Another takeaway from the conference was the appeal of small and medium-sized South African listed companies. Piet Viljoen saying that they were at levels that hadn't existed for many years, if not decades. What was your take on that? Did you go back home and start pulling out annual reports to see whether he was pointing you towards something interesting, given that you've got the whole world to choose from?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have a South African smaller company, AECI, in the portfolio at the moment. And I mean, that whole theme, if you think about it, like where has the money been going the last 10 years? It's been largely in passives. That's largely the large companies. And who have people been taking, when people move their money from active managers to passive funds, well, the active managers has to pay for that redemption, so has to raise funds somehow. And so quite often the small caps get discarded. So it's a global phenomenon. And that was why, and when you look at a number of the variables, including the valuations, or especially the valuations really, and the growth prospects, we are positioned in mid caps and smaller companies rather than the large companies because they just offer better value. And I mean, the other thing is if growth is hard to come by, well, one of the ways in which the big companies can grow is to gobble up the little companies, you know, and to make bids for them at huge premiums. And so you have that optionality in the smaller companies that you're not going to have. No one's going to take over Amazon or Microsoft or Nvidia. But, you know, somebody could take over some of the companies Pete mentioned. And I'm not going to, you know, people must go and watch his presentation to hear the name. So I totally agree. And I totally, and I think it's a global phenomenon as well. And of course, you know, South Africa is not the only cheap market in the world. Hong Kong's pretty cheap. And that's why we've got, in fact, we have about as much, if not slightly more in Hong Kong than we have in America. Now, some people might go, you've got to be kidding me. I'm going, well, that's where the value is. That's the market that's been ignored. And they go, well, but I mean, China, like, what about the growth? And you go, well, it's hardly like the U.S. economic data is a bed of roses. That's why the Federal Reserve is lowering rates a little bit, you know? They're worried about the unemployment. So I think they're on the money, Pitt and Sy.
The Federal Reserve lowering rates. We heard last night that Jay Powell, the Fed chairman, is cutting interest rates there by 50 basis points or 0.5% rather than what many thought would be only a 25-point cut. Were you surprised?
To be honest, I don't pay any attention to that. I didn't have a forecast. You know, no one in our team, we didn't poll our team and say, how much do we think the Fed's going to lower rates? Because we just don't worry about that kind of stuff. What is interesting is I read an article this morning that of the 113 economists who were surveyed by Bloomberg, only 9 of them expected a cut of this magnitude. Now, you know, you never really know because it's not just about the number, it's what did they say. And what they said is that, you know, they've got a dual mandate. They've got to achieve maximum employment and inflation around 2%. So they're obviously a little bit happier with inflation coming, you know, falling largely because of the base effect. But unemployment has been ticking up. And so they've got to manage it. And I guess to go 50 basis points, if it's, you know, they don't want to be too late. They were too late last time. So let's err on the side of caution and do that. The one point I haven't really seen a lot of people comment on this morning is that what they did say is the committee will continue reducing its holdings of treasury securities. Now that's this quantitative tightening that I touched on in my presentation. And I hope my presentation wasn't too complicated for, you know, but so maybe that means I have to watch it a couple of times, which is not a bad thing. But, you know, one has to recognize that the era of quantitative easing and low interest rates is really over because, I mean, you're down to 4.75 to 5%. That's not the naught that was the environment which many of these companies flourished in. So, the other thing, Alec, and I think we've just got to be mindful of this, and I guess it never appears at the time, but if you look back, we don't have a lot of data points on this, okay? But the Fed cutting rates happened before the last two recessions. And actually, if you go back, and that was in 2000 and 2019, obviously COVID, you know, exacerbated that thing. So let's take that. So the problem is we don't have a lot of data points. But if you go back to, you know, 1974, typically when the Fed starts lowering rates, it means lower economic growth. Okay, that's what they're seeing, and that's why they're lowering rates. Okay, so we just got to be quite on the ball. If that flows through to companies' earnings, that's going to be a factor. But that's what history tells us.
History also tells us that the best time to be buying shares is when interest rates start falling. There's a direct correlation between the two. Now, that's markets generally. Clearly, it's not really your game because you're looking for the jewels in any kind of market condition. But if you are a person who owns a lot of exchange-traded funds and, you know, in other words, just buying the market generally, is this a good time to be upping the ante?
Well, you know, I think, you know, the problem with looking back, and we never really one of those people who say, oh, well, presidential years, markets do well or that kind of thing, is because every time there's different situations. So, yes, it's, you know, maybe it has been a good time, but it depends on what the valuation is. So in 2000, when they started lowering interest rates in 2000, you know, valuations are pretty much where they are now. And over the next year, markets fell in a heap. In 2019, prices were lower, but also fell in a heap, but that's because of COVID. So each time it's different. And that's why we don't really pay too much. You know, we'll be aware of it. We know that the Fed's lowered rates and all that. And we'll say, okay, well, what does that do? That's not good for companies that have got a lot of cash. Because what does that mean? It means that they're going to earn less interest income on those businesses. And it is good if that lower rate gets passed on to the underlying companies. It is good for those companies who are indebted. But you've got to be careful about making sweeping statements, because it depends if a company's got a lot of debt. You know, maybe they fixed the debt. You know, maybe they've got, so that rate is locked in. You know, it's only helpful if it's variable. You know, it might help the housing market. And I see the home building stocks, you know, hit a new high. So one's got to be careful about making sweep. It's the second level thinking, Alec. You got to look a bit deeper, you know. And I mean, what was interesting yesterday is that the market took the news positively initially, then closed on the lows. And then lots of people were saying, oh, that's not a good sign. But then you wake up this morning and Asia's up. And, you know, 2% in Europe's up nearly 2%. And that's good. And I'll tell you, the other thing is it also has an impact on currencies. So the euro's strong, sterling's strong. You know, they're all close to year highs. The rand's strong. Brazilian real. So all those people who got all their money sitting in the US, okay, we've got to be mindful of the fact that, well, actually, maybe the US dollar is not the best currency right now, because all these other currencies are appreciating. So there's lots of moving parts. And that's why we just focus on bottom-up individual company that helps, rather than trying to guess 15 different variables.
You know, some of those sayings, sell in May and go away. If you'd done that at some point in time, you would have lost a lot of money. It's like the horse racing industry.
Correct.
When you're following form, second run after a rest, don't touch the horse. Well, many horses have won second run after it, and so on. You can keep going through it. And it, particularly exactly. When you've got so many moving parts. Talking about moving parts, here in South Africa, two well-known companies delivered their financial results today. I know it's not the area where you focus your attention on. But have you got any early thoughts on Remgro, which has been punted for years as the greatest investment in South Africa, one a stock you should have as a cornerstone of your portfolio, and Discovery, which is one of the few South African world-class businesses, a business that has gone into the international community and has done incredibly well, including where you live in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, Alec, I haven't looked at these companies in 20 years. Okay, so so bear with me because I've only had an hour this morning to have a quick look at them. But it's interesting. So I thought, okay, Alec, but what that does is it means I'm free from bias. You've been looking at a company and you wedded with a company and you're the analyst of the last 15 years and management, this, that, and the other. You know, so I'm free from bias. Okay, I'm going to look at this. I'll approach this as though I've never seen this business before, like it's a Hong Kong listed company that I've just stumbled upon, and I'll give you my impressions. Okay, so obviously Remgro is very tied into the South African economy, you know, with the 50% MediClinic and OUTsurance and Air Products and all the rest. But what's interesting for me is EPS is not growing. You know, in fact, it fell to 10 Rand 18. They were making 11 Rand in 2013. So earnings in the last 10 years have not grown. And in fact, on a total return analysis perspective, in terms of using the price increase, share price increase, and if you'd reinvested the dividends, okay, you know, in Rand terms, it's down 12% in 10 years. But in dollar terms, down 44%. So for a foreign shareholder, it's been a terrible investment, okay? And it's now trading at a premium. Sorry, it was trading at a premium to book. It's now at a discount to book. So you see, the market's quite smart. So it was always this wonderful business. That's why people are they going to add value. That's why people pay more than the underlying asset value, because it's almost like built in, oh, well, these guys are going to add value to those assets. Okay, but they haven't done that, so now it's at a discount. But I stand back and I look at it and I go, well, hang on. They're telling me that the intrinsic value per share is 251 Rand, but they only earned 10 Rand. That's 4% return. That sounds pretty poor. Okay. So you haven't actually grown earnings per share, you know, and this is my intrinsic value. And I've got a 4% return on intrinsic value. That's not very good. Especially when you actually dig in there. And I mean, as I said, please bear with me. There might be something that I've completely missed, but I quickly went and had a look and said, well, how's that intrinsic value made up? You know, what is the difference between book value and intrinsic value? It's, well, you know, maybe they got into the business way back when, but now they think, management thinks it's worth a lot more. Well, a big chunk of that intrinsic value is their telecoms business, and that's losing money. So why would I pay a big number for a business that's losing money? Okay, unless it's, I really think it's a once-off. Outsurance has obviously done well. And so, you know, the problem with these big conglomerates, and that's often why they trade at a discount, is because you have every year, you have some doing well and some disappointing. Okay. And so you go, well, not again. You know, next year, maybe that business will do well and this one will disappoint. And so, you know, management, I think management need to unlock this value. And, you know, I mean, they really do. It's disappointing. And so then I thought, okay, well, how long has this management team been in place? I see they've been in place for, you know, 14 years and the CFO 9 years or so. So I stand back and look at this and I say 1.6% dividend yield, 11 times earnings, low ROE. I'm not buying this. Okay, that would be me. Now,
well, that's a very good insight. As you say, you come without bias, and often in the South African context, you just buy Barimgro, put it in your portfolio because it has this reputation of being well managed over a long period of time. But you've outlined that for us real well. What about Discovery? What's your thought there?
Well, Discovery, so obviously, you know, Adrian Gore, amazing CEO, et cetera. And you look at this and you just read the headlines, you know, operating income up 17%, headline earnings up 15%, NAV up 16%, different picture. You know, embedded value. Now, what embedded value is for insurance companies is you've got your net assets, but what embedded value does is, well, hang on, you know, you've got a whole lot of policies which are going to run, and it's taking the profits, the assumed profits of those existing policies, okay, which so that you're probably going to earn in future. You know, that's up 12%. Then you have a look and you go, why is it done so well? Well, their Ping An Health Insurance JV, it's up 80 earnings, you know, now starting to contribute, up 85%. And you go, yeah, pretty impressive guy to have done a deal with Ping An.
In China.
And so I look at this and I go, well, what have we got? We know, as I said on that conference, I mean, we know that share prices go up because earnings are growing. That's why Remgro hasn't gone up. Earnings haven't been growing. Okay. Well, Discovery's got some growth prospects here. It's grown earnings. It's got some growth prospects with Ping An. I mean, Ping An's only just started contributing. New business up 18%. I go, well, no surprise that on a total return basis, Discovery's up 61% over the last 10 years, where Remgro, you know, pretty much nothing. And even in dollar terms, up 3%. So at least it's been a decent business. So I mean, and it's on 12 times forward earnings. You know, so I'm going, well, this is almost the same valuation as Remgro. It's really no competition.
So that's my
5 cents analysis.
If you're a hedge fund manager, from what you've just said now, given that they're on a similar rating, you'd be going long Discovery, short Remgro. In other words, expecting that eventually the market is going to give those two companies their realistic ratings.
Well, you know, shorting is a different story. And what you've got to be careful of with shorting is, let's say tomorrow Remgro put out a SENS announcement. They go, we're going to unlock this value that we think we've got. You know, we're going to list OUTsurance separately. We're going to sell off this telco business for more than our intrinsic value and all the rest. So that's the problem. You're always exposed to those, that tail risk as a short. So I'm not sure I would do that. But if you forced me to buy one of these, I mean, it's Discovery all the way. But
OUTsurance, incidentally, is already separately listed, so don't have that option. But they certainly do have other unlisted stocks in their portfolio. As you say, you didn't really have much time to look at them. But thank you, Sean. Just to close off with U.S. interest rate, what happens next, and should we care? Given what you said earlier, that you focus very much on finding great stocks or great individual companies, bottom up, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is over the last 20 days or so, what you're seeing is the equal weighted S&P 500. So there's the equal where you get the S&P 500, which is market cap weight, and that's when you've got 7.5% of your money in NVIDIA. But the equal weighted, you know, you have 500 positions equal weighted, so that each got, what, 0.2%. Okay, that's outperformed the S&P 500 by 2% in the last 20 days. So, and in fact, it was hitting new highs. So for me, that shows you what other investors are thinking, that that actually those smaller companies, though outside the Mag 7, are catching a bit, and that are and people think that they will benefit more than the big guys. And I don't disagree with that. And you know, they're on lower valuations. If earnings, if this helps earnings grow, if it reduces the cost of funding for many businesses and they're able to increase earnings, then, you know, their valuation should be higher. But you know, so that's what I would think. But also, again, not just outside, not just in the US, because remember now you've got, and of course now everyone's going to worry about, well, we'll focus on what are the other central banks going to do? Are they also going to lower rates? And so maybe that's going to drive economic growth in those countries too. So, you know, I mean, it comes back to what I was saying at the presentation. I think the US is, and not just me, Pete and Cy, that the US, it's done its magic. And of course, everybody, that's where everybody's portfolio is, offshore. Okay. And now all of a sudden the action is somewhere else. It's a bit like, to use a rugby analogy, it's a bit like everyone thinks the ball's going to go down the back line, but then the eighth man picks up the ball in the scrum and runs around, scores on the blind side. It's like, ah, oh, I was watching the back line. So that's the, so, you know, everyone's watching the Mag 7. That's the back line. What about the other ones on the blind side?
Sean Pesch from Ranmore Funds. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.